Welcome to the Weekly Squeak, your weekly geeky squeak with me, Christian Chiller, featuring a roundup of a few links and an interview. And my interview this week is with Paolo Negri, the CTO of Contentful, an API-based content management system. And it's actually based here in Berlin, doing quite well in that sort of space. And we spoke about some of their new features and plans specifically aimed at developers. Once again, some of you should be able to see me and some of you should be able to hear me. I still haven't quite finessed the Weekly Squeak video in terms of layout and things like that, but I think for now, this is fine. I've actually got quite a bit of news to share with you as well, but for now, let's get to my links of the week. First, an article from one of my favorites here, Stephen J. Vaughan Nichols, on how to judge open source projects. And I actually wrote a piece for a client a couple of months ago, somewhat covering this subject, more on metrics, more if you were inside an open source project in opensource.com and a few other outlets also have some really good advice on this. And this is more for internal open source project maintainers. This article is more aimed at people from the outside looking in, how to judge if an open source project is one that is worth spending your time with learning. And of course, one of the common metrics that people tend to look at is GitHub stars. Doesn't necessarily mean very much. Another might be to look at the community action on the project. So merges, that's GitLab, but anyway, pull request merges, issues solved, communication, etc. But it's somewhat difficult sometimes to know what those really mean, as from an insider's perspective and an outsider's perspective. There's a nice little bullet list here as well that could be useful to you as a summary. Can you figure out where to get the source code? Not everyone is on GitHub. Can people contribute? There's often lots of barriers in the way. So is it really open source in the proper meaning of the sense? Is the process clear and straightforward? What about if you're not part of the in crowd, which is actually another interesting point to bear in mind? Sometimes you might think you can contribute to a project, but then really contributions from external people sort of, they're not welcome, but they're not necessarily taken seriously, maybe, shall we say. And are they using a well-known license? So if from an outside perspective, maybe as a business person or just a contributor wanting to find a project to contribute to, have a look at this article and it might help you make your judgment call. That is actually the last technology article. Now it's all gaming. First is an article here on Wired from Cecilia D'Anastasio. It was actually shared to me by my wife. So Dungeons & Dragons has been expanding in all sorts of ways, shapes and forms into all sorts of different people over the past few months, years, I guess. And TikTok. TikTok is a site I have managed to mostly completely miss. Not necessarily any reason, but and there's an article here about Gen Zers on Gen Zers, I don't know, on TikTok doing Dungeons & Dragons videos. And there's some quite strange images from some of these here. Mostly kind of interpreting characters, I think, and playing out certain scenes and things like that. I don't think TikTok is short videos, so I don't think it's actually people playing games or anything like that. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. And I guess for someone like an old school D&D player like me, who is sort of getting exposed to different groups playing Dungeons & Dragons more recently with some of the groups I've been joining, it's interesting to see how lots of them manifest their passion and interest in different ways. So I found it quite interesting. One of my favorites here on the Digital Antiquarian from Jimmy Meyer, Bullfrog after Populous. Bullfrog were a games company from the UK in the 80s and 90s and made Populous. They made, what's the other one? It's in here. Actually, this text size is tiny. Let's make that a little bit bigger so you can actually look along with me. That's still tiny. It's a very small font size. I think that's a little bit better. So Populous, Syndicate, and a few other games that maybe weren't so well known. But for a period of time, you get a lot of companies like this in this era that have a couple of major hits and then just cannot keep going afterwards. And this is interesting. I mean, there's a photo at the top here where you see, I mean, the studio is probably a couple of dozen people at most, whereas now big game studios might be hundreds of people. And those teams come and go, obviously. But it's always quite interesting to read the history of some of these old classics and how they kind of somewhat haphazardly came together and really pushed the limits of the technology at the time to accomplish what they were trying to accomplish. And Populous was one. I think I have it on Good Old Games and Syndicate. I'd be intrigued to actually try them. I do remember playing them on my Amiga years ago. And this was actually one other interesting thing. So Jimmy Meyer has also written a book about the Amiga, which I did read. It was an interesting read. If you're into the understanding the depths of a story about a 1980s computer platform, of course, not everyone's taste. A lot of programmers, especially in Europe, really tied themselves to particular platforms that then went. And it's not such an issue these days. And I think that's why also why a lot of these companies kind of vanished. They were too slow to change, and then the platform that they were building for kind of vanished. But it's an interesting article in Jimmy's usual style. So if you're a child of my sort of... Oh yeah, that's the other thing. Peter Molyneux was basically a bit of a sort of... kind of cause celebre star who wasn't afraid to do crazy things when people interviewed him. So there's a photo here of him being interviewed on the toilet. He actually has his trousers up, disappointingly. But, well, not disappointingly, but you know what I mean. It's not as sensational as it could be. I remember once doing a photo shoot where they put us in the shower and put the shower on us. So things didn't change that much 20 years later. But, yeah, it's always fun reading these stories of these old games companies and kind of how they did things and what they were like in those days. And finally, coming back kind of to the Dungeons & Dragons angle, I should have tied those together better. This is an article from Michael A. Gold on There Will Be Games Medium publication. Four great history books for game masters. I was going down a bit of a rabbit hole the past week of advice for games masters, dungeon masters, storytellers, games runners, whatever you want to call them. Games ours. One of the things I like most about trying to come up with scenarios and write scenarios is actually pulling from history. And I make lots of notes, but I've never been very good at going back to look at them sometimes. Maybe I should a bit more. But this article summarizes four really good books from various points in history to help you kind of bring a little bit of realism into the fantasy settings. And I mean, stories transfer across. So there's a book on the Crusades. There's a book on the history of China. There is a book on the year 1000, kind of the author poses as the first for globalization. And then finally, there's also 1491, America before Columbus, Americas to be precise, actually, before Columbus, if you know your history. So I added these to my to-read list. I will look forward to reading some of these in the future. And that was my links for the week. And now I have an interview with, yes, the CTO of Contentful, a kind of reasonably growing tech startup here in Berlin, a content API, if you like, Paolo Negri of Contentful. Enjoy.
So I'm Paolo, CTO at Contentful. I founded the company together with Sasha Konietzke in 2012, and I've been the CTO at Contentful since then. We started the company over here in Berlin, Germany. And yeah, it's been an exciting journey. Right now, the company counts around 400 people. And we have offices in Berlin, Germany, and in the US, San Francisco. And yeah, it's a pleasure today to talk with you, Chris.
Did you say 400 or 300?
400.
Okay. Before we get into what Contentful is, I'll add a very slight disclaimer, is I actually used to work for Contentful and Paolo was my boss. So I'm asking questions I know the answers to in certain times. But the thing that struck me there is at the time it was only less than 100 people. So that's actually quite an incredible growth in the past 3 years, I think. So yeah.
Yeah, it's been pretty exciting. And we kept on having the traction that we had at the time you joined. So the company kept on growing quickly. And we close to doubled every year since when you were with us. So yep. It's been always busy and it's always exciting as you experienced it.
And what is Contentful? I think certain people who are in the space that Contentful operates in will certainly know it, but it's kind of a space that is newish to some people. So let's explain what Contentful is and the kind of ecosystem it operates in.
Yeah, of course. So Contentful is a content platform. And to explain the whole idea and where it comes from, we can start from the beginning where we started by defining us as API first content management. And the idea of API first content management is really that right now where each website and each web application is essentially a piece of software that needs to integrate content, you need to have a facility, software of sort, where you manage content in a way where the people who produce the content can actually use it with a good usability from a web application kind of experience. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, this content is stored accordingly to a strict structure definition. And then the content can be consumed via an API in order to integrate the content into software. And this is a very different approach from the first generation of content management system. The first generation was mostly focused on rendering HTML pages. And also it was all revolving around this concept of page. And instead, Contentful allows the production of software in a familiar environment, the production of content in a familiar environment, but it allows for the integration of this content into software by emitting essentially a data structure that is distributed via API. And this way it allows for very interactive, content-driven application and experiences like the one that we use every day from our phone or from our computers.
So to some people who hear this, that concept might sound kind of like you now, to be blunt, have quite a few competitors in the space, from open sure. source projects to commercial products. So now it seems like this idea doesn't seem particularly new, but when you mentioned you started it in 2012, I think.
Yes, yeah. That was the year. And Sasha started working on the concept in 2011 already. And back then, it wasn't a common approach. And we had to explain to many of our early customers, well, why it was even worth to have content emitted as an API and why you should use this approach. And gradually, as software kept on hitting the world, it became clear to everyone that if you want to integrate content with software, the only one way is effectively to do it through products that allow you to deal with content through the APIs. And also more and more, and that's why now we call it Contentful Content Platform, is because it's not so much only about the facility of having an API that makes you make a step forward, but it's also the fact of being able to integrate the content lifecycle into your software development lifecycle and essentially keep on iterating on both fronts of the technology side of your application and on the content side that is integrated in your application and work on these two aspects in parallel as an organization, possibly on multiple projects in parallel and so on. So the concept did evolve quite a bit since the early beginning. Hmm. And as you say, API first is just the default in the industry today. Like everyone will wonder why bother even with other approaches. And the platform did evolve further. And now we have this wall, development pipelines in Contentful. There is a possibility of defining environments and switching the environment that you use in production in order to be able to roll out fluently new deployments of your application and of your content. And there are many more collaborations aspects in the platform for the production of content and so on. So we, since when we started, the concept did evolve a lot, but definitely was the wave of the API approach that pushed us forward and kept us growing. And then we got recently to the launch of this community plan that is again connected to the idea of content management and development integration.
Let's come back to that. I'd like to come back to that in a minute. I'd like to go back a little bit first.
Go ahead.
Because this is your kind of problem space was a space I understood myself. I might come to my own journey on this story in a minute, but I'd like to know, back in 2011, 2012, What was the personal pain points of you and Sasha that you decided to create this around to solve? What were you grappling with at the time?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is interesting because we came from different points. Sasha was really much trying to solve the problem of managing content for mobile application. And that's obviously what showed him the way to having an API-first approach, because mobile applications are obviously a very dynamic piece of software. And if you need to integrate content in there, you need to have it. You need to have content as data structure, and then he started developing essentially this backend that would allow his customers to enter content again in a web form, and on the other side, it would allow him to build the application consuming content from an API. And when Sasha approached me with this idea, back then I was working in social games. social games obviously are fundamentally are just a server client architecture, and the client is the game. And we were going through a lot of pain actually to manage the in-game content, because the game is full of content. You know, there is the name of the characters, there is all the elements that are in the shop that is present in the game, and all the speech bubbles of the characters when they talk to each other. There is a lot of content, and normally, social games are published in very different countries, in very different languages. And we were managing a super clunky pipeline that we used to use Google spreadsheet, and everyone would try to collaborate to the content. And then we would use the Google spreadsheet API to essentially extract a horrendous XML export of it and build these into the pipeline that eventually would make the content also become an asset. So the intuition that I had was, I told Sasha, well, this is not only about solving the problem of managing content for mobile apps, but is solving the problem of managing content in any kind of interactive software application. And before working in social games, I was working at some point in advertising. And that's a whole other area where there is a lot of content, but there wasn't any decent content management system for that. Because again, you have this problem where content needs to be expressed as a data structure in order to be be able to use it reasonably in that kind of context of advertisement or games and so on. And that's really the pain that we were trying to solve. There were really no tools. Every content management system was super eager to serve you HTML page. And then you were like, well, now what am I going to do with it if actually I want to display only a snippet of text somewhere, and then need to know exactly how to address this snippet out of the wall, big context of content that I'm working with. So the main problem was really there was no decent content experience for people who needed to integrate content in a software application. And that's us software engineers, essentially the problem that we set out to solve.
And so, I don't think I've actually even mentioned this, strangely, in several years of doing this podcast. Well, maybe I've spoken to a lot of people. Sometimes I forget what I've said. My own journey to this came from doing a lot of work on aforementioned content management systems, Drupal in this case. And even back, actually about the same sort of time, probably 2011, 12, 13, there were lots of groups in that space talking about headless content management systems. I think, I'm not entirely sure if I've just replaced whatever they were using with the term we use now, but that was what they were talking about. And there were ways of doing it, but it wasn't the first class citizen. It was mostly like you describe. And I remember countlessly battling against theming and things like that. And then people wanting, especially in those days, mobile versions of content and stuff like that. And now I think I've fallen out of touch a little bit, but I think all the major content management systems have similar ideas as well now, I think. I don't know. I've fallen out of touch a bit.
It is now mainstream idea in the content management system market. Whether you look at open source and so on, it is really the approach that is now becoming the default.
So most of the audience of this show are developers, so I would like to focus a lot on that side, which gets to your kind of current feature announcements. But let's just start with the other side of this first. So Contentful is a couple of different components, and one of those is the editor experience.
Yeah.
So what can a content writer slash editor expect when they use Contentful? And I suppose actually the interesting thing that comes into my mind here, which is something that would come up a lot when I used to do content management systems, is How customizable is that experience for the content people first?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question because this is also a feature that evolved a lot over time in Contentful. And one thing that we recognized early on was that when editors started using the editor that we made available initially in Contentful, we saw a lot of requests regarding, I have this very specific type of content. Could I edit it in a specific way? And Contentful at the very beginning offered a few type of fields that you could edit. So there were basic things like, you know, a big box of text, short text, like string or tag, number, and few others. But we really recognize that it's like, well, there is a huge range of different editing details and specifics that we will need to integrate in our editing experience. And that's why we chose at the beginning an approach of achieving this through extensibility and customizability of the editor. And at the beginning, it was all about customizing some of the fields. And these days, we very recently in TCR, I think in February, we launched what we call the application framework, which is effectively a compound of few different capabilities of the platform and also obviously of the web application that is used for editing that allows our users to define specific components of our application. And these can be just overriding how a field is edited, so specifying a specialized editor for a single field, but can also be a specialized editor for a bigger piece of content, or even just the entire screen of our web application in case the customer or the user wants to plug the editor in a complete customized experience where there is only the skeleton of what Contentful provides and all the rest is provided by the user. And again, this is, since we are talking to an audience of developer, is quite important. It is one of the aspects that is open also now in the community plan. The app framework is effectively provided completely for also the free plan and is all documented publicly, so it's possible to use it. And it's really possible to integrate closely Contentful with third parties or also to realize features that are contained, so to say, in Contentful and self-hosted in Contentful through that. But that's been an important part. And of course, I think right now we are only up to some point in the journey and there will be more to come to make for a more fluid experience for editors.
Okay, so let's get to the developer experience now. Maybe we will talk a little bit around the community plan here as we do this. So, I mean, I have an actual very active use case and that we can work with that. I've had a Jekyll site for some time, a very long time. There's content in there going back over 12 years. I mean, it hasn't always been in Jekyll, but that's another story. And because of that, I have a lot of images. I have a lot of stuff on my hard drive and in GitHub repositories that really I don't need there anymore, to be honest with you. it doesn't get updated very often. I'm not updating posts from 12 years ago very much. So if I wanted to say, okay, this sounds good, I would like to maybe wipe away a lot of that in the Jekyll site and just host my content somewhere else. The images, et cetera, somewhere else. I start looking at your community plan. What would be my developer experience of that workflow? Like, what can I do and what do I get at the end and how do I visualize it some way? If that makes sense.
It makes sense. So, yeah, I mean, what you will do is obviously to start by opening an account. And essentially, as soon as you open the account, you enter an environment where one thing that you can start doing is defining the schema of your content. So, as you said, you're dealing with a blog kind of structure. So, probably what you will want to define for sure is a model that starts by defining what a blog post is and what are the components that define a blog post. Like it can be the title, it can be the shorthand for the URL that is used for the specific blog post, the body of the text, or maybe the body can be broken down in few different parts. Like you can might have an abstract and then a title, and then maybe a reference image that is the canonical image for the page and so on. So you will define what your post looks like, and you can also define maybe if you have some constant subsections that you embed in every blog post or in most blog posts. You will define also the types of these subsections, like let's say you have a featured product that is maybe what you talk about in the blog post. You could define a product model where essentially you will say, okay, I defined that my product as a code, as a URI for people to go and see it at the site of the vendor, and so on and so on and so on. It will specify essentially what is the schema, which is called content type in Contentful. It will define all your content types, where you will have one content type for the blog post, one content type for all the subsections of your blog post, and maybe also content type for something that you would say is the category of the blog post. And it will define relationships between all these entities. And when you finish with this work, what you have is a well-organized conceptual version of all the elements that are composing your blog application and the data that is in your blog. And after that, you will have to somehow think how you import, obviously, all what you have already in your blog.
That was one of my next questions, yeah.
Exactly. And, and then the way you could do this is obviously one thing you could do is just go in the editor and manually upload and copy and paste everything. Yeah. And then that will be very efficient. But the better opportunity that you have is Contentful as a content management API that essentially you define your content types, what you can do is just to issue essentially API calls that will allow you to create essentially objects that reflect your the data structure that you define in your content types. So you could say you extract the data from your current blog post that is in Jekyll, and you will write a script that essentially takes every page or blog post, whatever it is called in Jekyll, and adapts it to the structure that you define it in Contentful, and then makes content management API calls on Contentful in order to create the corresponding entity in Contentful. And very similarly, you could do for organizing your images. If there are related images, you could just programmatically upload them to Contentful and link them to the right content entry that references these that is referenced in this blog post. So essentially, you could develop a script that helps you importing 12 years worth of content. So you don't need to do everything manually, but you can just do it in one big batch running your script. And from that point, essentially, your content will be effectively in Contentful.
And so then to get the content visible somewhere, I use another API that gives me, I'm guessing, JSON. I think you now have GraphQL as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can do a multitude of things with that. I mean, I know you have a pretty close connections with things like Gatsby, for example, the kind of more JavaScript world CMS, but probably others too.
That's a next step. You will need to choose some framework to actually visualize your content, and Gatsby is a pretty good example.
Could be Jekyll again, probably.
Or Jekyll again, if you feel an aficionado of the technology, for sure. You could use that, and essentially we'll consume what is called the Content Delivery API, and that's a very powerful API that allows, again, to very specifically make queries to obtain only the content that is interesting for the page or element that you are rendering at the moment. And there is a choice. You can use the REST API, which is the original API of Contentful, or you can also use the GraphQL API, which of course is the more modern version of it and has some more flexibility into it. And there is also might be more network efficient depending by the approaches that you take. So essentially, you can consume this API, and what is great of this approach is that you can, depending by your use case, you can choose something that consumes the API as your user visits the website, or you can choose to rather build your website every time that you update it, if it's something that you don't update very often, is acceptable to have the build time big in between the moment you publish the publish button and the moment your website is updated. There are different solutions, but in general, this way, you have a strong approach that allows you again to consume content programmatically and eventually to reuse it in different places. As an example, one advantage of having your content in Contentful is if you want some of your content featured elsewhere, you can just offer access to the API to a third party in order to access your content. And they will have it in a format that is, API, JSON-based API. So it will be easy to integrate in a third-party syndication kind of application, which is something that usually wasn't possible with the previous
So this is something I'd actually like to dig into further, because bizarrely, my Jekyll site does a lot of strange things. And it's really pushing the limits of it. So I'm almost getting a little bit of free support here, maybe. I don't know. But hopefully it's a good use case for everyone listening as well. So, for example, I actually have a lot of Zapier tasks that are triggered by, at the moment, RSS feeds from Jekyll, because it's kind of easier and it works. So this sort of... Contentful is designed to be extensible, but as far as I can tell, basically it's the same thing. If there's an output in a JSON or GraphQL format and a tool can accept that, I can do something with it. And I'm guessing you're probably working with and encouraging a community to create commercial and open source
Absolutely.
Tools to help as well.
Yeah, I mean, Contentful has been we started really with the developers, the persona that we wanted to design the tool for. So it is designed for integration. And we talked about APIs. There is also a quite powerful webhook system.
Yeah.
And I think, usually the word webhook just alludes to some simple mechanic where it's like, you get a fixed kind of format in your webhook structure. In Contentful, the system is quite evolved. And essentially what you have is a range of events that Contentful can generate. And you can send these events to different endpoints depending by, for example, let's say you want to ping four different sources whenever you update something.
Yeah, okay.
Or you want to process some of your assets. As an example, you will want an image to be transformed and so on. You can, through the webhook system, whenever an image is amended or changed in any way, you can essentially define a webhook that says, okay, whenever something happens to an image, I will... make this call to this endpoint, and the calls are quite customizable. Like, it's possible to define the body of the webhook call so that it adapts and plugs directly into other services. You talked to us, an example, about Zapier. So it's possible to customize payloads and other details of the web call that will be executed so that you can directly from Contentful call other systems. And as an example, many AWS services work out of the box. So if you want to do something on the cloud, you can trigger it directly from Contentful. And the way you can think about it is really to have a pub/sub system that essentially is emitted by Contentful. And obviously, because you also have the content management API, what you can have is systems that receive webhook calls and then they respond by eventually making changes in the content management API if you have some transformations that you want to do. Yeah. So it's a pretty comprehensive system that really allows you to integrate your pipeline of content production and eventually also software deployment. Really allows you to manage the whole life cycle in one place, and Contentful can be the central orchestration point where you log in and trigger all the events that are needed.
Yeah, something I'm thinking about. I also kind of bring in content from, I aggregate into my own site as well.
Absolutely, that's another possibility to hook other sources to create for you in the content management API entries that you can use to enrich your content.
I run a new live stream where I actually do developer experience evaluation. So It seems like
that's an interesting candidate.
A good one to try. Okay, so I mean, interesting when I look down the comparison. So when you look at the kind of pricing for Contentful, the jump from free to the next tier is quite a large one.
Sure.
And there's a lot that you get for free. I think there's probably a few limits here that might surprise people how quickly they might hit them. You know, for example, 25,000 records seems like a lot, but when you read further, it says it also includes assets and things. So if you actually start to think, that can add up quite quickly if you're not careful. Sure. But still, there's quite a lot here. So I suppose the one question, I don't know if you want to answer this or not, but it's like, is this going to be sustainable for you, do you think? Like, there's a cost, obviously, in running this. I mean, assuming you've thought about this for some time.
But, Yeah, of course, it is a commitment, offer teas. And as you say, the capacity of the free plan is now sized to a level where it should allow for any personal project or reasonably contained scope project. So it's really for, as an example, the blog post is a perfect example that they should definitely fit in the community plan without too much trouble. And it's definitely possible to do some significant things there. For more professional and engaged use, of course, we have the other plans, but the idea was that these could serve most self-contained projects for what we see from small mobile applications to personal project like blog post or a small shop. All these use cases should be covered by community. Regarding the sustainability, well, of course, it's something that we gave for before launching. Yeah. And of course, Contentful is very successful in the enterprise, very successful in digital companies. So we have a very healthy amount of revenue that we can get from those customers. And effectively, we feel that having the developer community being able to use Contentful in a meaningful way, it is something that ultimately helps us in a number of ways. So we really feel, yes, this is a cost. It is definitely sustainable for us. And ultimately, we find value in having professional developers getting onboarded on Contentful, being able to run their projects, and being exposed to all what Contentful is capable and being able also to prove it. Because, of course, sometimes when you approach new products, one question that you ask yourself is like, I see how is it advertised, I see what's communicated on the website, but it's quite different when you try it. You really realize what enables you to do, how it enables you to do, and if it fits your use case. And we really think it's important that anyone who wants to experience Contentful just can do it without friction, without having to put up some money up front, and can use it for an extended amount of time and just get involved with it. Also, as you said, we have, as I said, we have this application framework, which is another interesting ground of experimentation of new ideas. Like, can you extend Contentful to connect maybe with your service if you are running a service yourself? Or can you experiment something that, you've seen at work a problem, and at work you don't really have the time to try out crazy things that you would like to prove. And with Contentful, you can for free from home or run some experiment and make a proof of concept and try out some crazy ideas that maybe you don't find and means to do. And Contentful really give you full exposure to the application framework. And that's, I think, also an interesting area to explore how integrations between systems can be done. And to some degree, I think it might be an intriguing topic by itself. There isn't so much out there freely available, and can be just an interesting idea to say, well, if I want, for example, to have a content management solution that also interfaces with some specific artificial intelligence service that I'm aware of, you can try to hook them up together and see what the looks and feel So we really find that there is a value for us in making this available. We want everyone to be able to learn for free. Like, you know, we don't want the learning content to cost you anything. And we think there is a value in also collecting feedback from this community and seeing what we learn from having the community interacting with all these tools and aspects of the product that we make available.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm actually thinking I might try a more experimental project.
that's really what I love. And I mean, that's what the internet is about. You know, it's been, and you probably can relate. I mean, you come also from the days where technology was very different. And at the beginning, it was really a struggle.
What are you saying, Paul?
You know, at the beginning, it was quite a struggle to try out things. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. I can see some valid use cases here. I know you still have a couple of other even competitors in this space that offer it for free. And what free means, of course, is always a bit unclear, that I might investigate as a side comparison as part of a kind of further research. But there's a lot. I think there's a lot here. I think probably the one main thing that might put off people migrating from something like using a GitHub repository or something instead is a user limit. Whereas on GitHub, of course, it can be as many as you want, really. But in reality, how many do you actually get on a lot of side projects? It's something to ask yourself, you know.
Yeah, that's why we put the limit at that point, because okay, this is really meant for yourself or for you and another person just to try out things. And if you start to have, you know, the problem of, okay, how do you onboard 5 editors on your project? Probably you also have other aspects to take care of. For that, you want probably to look at the paid plan and enjoy a bit more of the collaboration features and what is more... really, you know, team grade or enterprise grade aspects of the platform.
Just out of interest, though, I mean, because it's API access, obviously you have rate limiting on the APIs, but in theory, people could do all sorts of things with those APIs and add all sorts of things in front of them that maybe get around some of your limits in some ways. So do you have any kind of... terms of conditions of what people could do with those APIs? Or?
There are obviously fair usage policies, and you know, it's always important in a relationship with a vendor, it's always important to be honest on both sides, of course. But in general, I think, you know, someone can also try some hacks, and again, I mean, if they are rather innocent and they don't end up being, you know, can also be in the range of experiment, understanding what you can do. For example, if you want to try a custom editing, a completely custom editing experience where you say, I don't know, I want to do a super specific live blogging application. Okay, you might just try, I have editors not actually logging in Contentful to edit, but just push their edits through the API. And again, I mean, if you want to do it in a secure way, you might still need to upgrade your plan because you want to distinguish user identities and be
properly. That is true. That is true. Of
security. So, but in general, I think, you know, we give a bit of a degree of freedom, and again, fairness must be taken into account. But it is possible to mold the system into something that is intriguing, and definitely you can flex all your brain around what you can do with the tool.
Yeah.
I mean, somehow it's also, again, there is a playful aspect in building new projects and tinkering around with software. And we want to support that.
Okay. Final question I always like to ask. I mean, this has obviously been a relatively large feature you've been working on for some time, but, you know, you're a startup. What's next? What's on the roadmap for the next sort of 6 to 12 months?
Sure. I mean, we will keep on investing on two things. One is keep on investing on the application framework. So we will have new capabilities from a point of view of integration point on how customizable is the application, the richness of the events that we emit, more specifics regarding the PubSub system, regarding what can be interfaced with, and so on. So we keep on investing on this aspect. And in the paid branch of the product, we will keep on investing on next generation content editing and content related experience, like the whole collaboration around content production is becoming a bigger and bigger topic for Contentful. As I said, we really, you know, excel at integrating with the software development process, and especially with the agile software development process. And we want more and more to help editorial teams enter in the loop and be integrated in the loop in a very elegant and frictionless way. So we will keep on also investing on that front, and we have some exciting things that I cannot quite talk about yet coming at the end of the year, beginning of next year on this front. But what is also exciting is all these has been enabled also internally for Contentful by the application framework. So I think one new approach that we're really taking is somehow to build Contentful on Contentful, which is something we started making possible this year, which again, I find keep us very aligned with our developer audience, because especially our developers, day by day, have share most of the experiences that the standard developers at Contentful also have. So we find that is really a fair ground for everyone to play. And again, that's interesting, because if you try out the product as external developer, essentially you are trying out some of the things that you will be working on if you are working at Contentful as developer.
And that was my interview with Paolo from Contentful. I hope you enjoyed that. Now, I have a few things to share with you. I'm having some problems building my website right now. So there's a few things missing. Something has changed somewhere that is causing the build to time out. So there's a few things I want to direct you to my website to look at that I can't right now. Hopefully I'll have it fixed by the time you listen to this. But so the first episode of Board Game Jerk is out. You can find that on anchor.fm/boardgamejerk. The first episode of Stories About People is out. You can find that on anchor.fm/storiesaboutpeople. And finally, when I've fixed my website, you'll also find it at christiangillett.com/podcasts. I have a few other articles in there, and I also have my DXPOSÉ this week. I actually did on Contentful, so you can have a look there after listening or watching the interview. And I will have a new solo adventurer coming out probably a day or so after this podcast, where I'll be looking at Gentleman Thief. Actually, I'm suddenly having a complete blank on what it's actually called. I guess I should... Gentleman Bandit, close enough. So you can look forward to that. And you can find details of those. On Twitch. It's twitch.tv/DXPOSE. DXPOSÉ, that is. And for Solo Adventurer, twitch.tv/Solo Adventurer. For YouTube, you can just look for... Actually, I need to fix my YouTube link. I realize it's a bit of a pain to find. I need to get the link properly sorted out. But if you go to my website, even in its partially broken state, you will be able to find a link to my YouTube channel there. And you can find some of these videos there too. I think that is all I have to share with you right now. So, as always, if you have been, thank you very much for joining me, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.